Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We are broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Wednesday, September 29th. Coming up on today's show.
Frankly, this is just unacceptable. And I don't blame the actual, you know, staff on the ground who are just trying to do as many tests as they can. This is more of a leadership issue.
We'll hear from Memram Cook Tantramar MLA, Megan Mitten, who is back working part-time after a short maternity leave. Mitten weighs in on the performance of the Federal Green Party in New Brunswick, including the curious choice of candidate for the Beauséjour riding, as well as the continuing struggle for solutions to the healthcare staffing crisis. That conversation is coming up, but first, more local news and information. The province has announced two more deaths from COVID-19. Two people in their 80s, one in Fredericton and one in Edmundston, have died with the disease, bringing the death toll for September to 10 in the province. As 22 new cases were announced in Zone 1, a series of new potential exposure locations went up on the provincial website, with Rose's independent grocer in Sackville listed. A potential public exposure took place at Rose's on Sunday, September 19th, between 2 and 4 p.m. Anyone who is unvaccinated and frequented Rose's at that time is being asked to book a test immediately. Anyone fully vaccinated is asked to simply monitor for symptoms. Another resident of the Drew Nursing Home in Sackville has passed away with COVID-19. Helen Melita Lawrence passed away on Tuesday due to COVID at the age of 97. Condolences and memories can be shared at an online memorial at jonesfuneralhome.ca. Results on the latest testing conducted at the Drew Nursing Home are expected in later today. At last report, there were a total of 31 cases reported among staff and residents. Three people at the Drew have now died with the disease. Many in the Sackville community have been asking for ways to help out with the Drew, with offers of home cooking and baking piling up on social media. Drew manager Linda Shannon says that staff who are working long hours certainly appreciate treats, but for safety reasons, she is asking that snacks not be homemade. Shannon says the Drew must ensure items coming from outside are sanitized, and so boxes or bags of individually packaged goods are best. Donations and gifts can be left at the front door of the Drew between 8:30 and 4:30 p.m. Just ring the doorbell and someone will come to fetch the items. The province has ramped up its testing capacity. Public Health reported a whopping 3,500 tests conducted on Monday, the largest number of tests conducted in a single day in at least a year. Over 1,000 tests were conducted in Zone 1 alone on Monday. But with high new daily case counts and the cold season still blossoming, demand for tests appears to be keeping pace. The Sackville Assessment Center will have extended hours this week, says Jean Daigle, the VP Community for the Horizon Health Network. The center was open 10 hours on Monday and will be open again for 10 hours today and Friday this week. Staff are performing more than 100 swabs per day, says Daigle. He says the network is still seeing a high demand for testing in Sackville, and so priority bookings are being seen within 24 hours, but most others are being seen within 72 hours. It's not clear if that time gap counts the time from when a test is requested online or from when Public Health returns a call to book a test. In Nova Scotia, residents can book a test directly online and so skip the test of waiting for a phone call from Public Health to then book their test. CHMA inquired as to the rationale for the extra callback step in the New Brunswick system, but have yet to hear back. In the meantime, Daigle says Horizon is exploring other testing processes to assist in meeting the increased demand for tests. At a press conference following a meeting of the Atlantic Premiers on Tuesday, Premier Blaine Higgs indicated that rapid tests, also known as point-of-care tests, might be available in school communities within weeks.
Yes, indeed, it is being considered, and we have a lot of tests that we, you know, a lot of capability for test kits and availability of test kits, and we are looking how we can best utilize that. And I would say that in the coming weeks, you'll get information in that regard, because we do see it as a major way to allow us to test kids and keep them in school.
Rapid tests are currently available for use by businesses to make testing available to employees and are distributed by chambers of commerce across the province. CHMA reported last week that discussions were underway in the Department of Health on the possible use of rapid tests for K-12 schools and childcare facilities. And in fact, they are in use at one high school in the province. Spokesperson Bruce McFarland says a testing program was set up early last week at Southern Victoria High School in Perth Andover for students who have not been able to book a test through an assessment center. New Brunswick currently has just over 1.1 million rapid tests in its possession, distributed by the federal government. About 23% of those have been distributed throughout the province, and just about 2.1% have been used, according to federal reporting. Registering to travel into New Brunswick has moved from an email system to a web-based application. The registration form that was previously required to be emailed as a PDF document has been replaced as of Monday, said the province in a press release yesterday. Anyone fully vaccinated may now register for a permanent multi-use pass. However, those who are not vaccinated will be required to register each time they plan to enter New Brunswick. Anyone who registered before Monday via email will need to re-register on the web application, says the province. Mi'kmaq Elder William Nevin will speak tonight at Convocation Hall on the eve of the country's first National Day for Truth and Reconciliation tomorrow. The event is open to the public, though proof of vaccination is required. Nevin is a Mi'kmaq ceremonial elder of Elsabuktuk First Nation. Originally of Sebenacadie First Nation, he is a cultural counselor, a Sundance chief, traditional ceremonial elder, a mentor, and knowledge keeper. Elder Nevin authored the book Spiritual Journey and the Sundance and co-authored Collateral Damage and Collateral Healing in Our American Indian Communities, What Needs to Occur and When to Begin. He was featured in the NFB film The Sacred Sundance, The Transfer of a Ceremony. The film shows Nevin's instrumental role in bringing back the Sacred Sundance ceremony to the Mi'kmaq people. He is currently the Sundance chief of the White Eagle Sundance and works as a drug and alcohol counselor with the Lone Eagle Treatment Center at Elsabuktuk First Nation. The talk is part of the annual President's Speakers Series at Mount Allison, which brings noted speakers from across Canada and around the globe to campus to address issues of current interest or importance. Elder William Nevin will deliver the first talk, titled Then and Now, tonight at 6:30 p.m. in Convocation Hall on 37 York Street in Sackville. Masks and proof of vaccination are required for attendees. Last but not least on today's show, we bring you a conversation with Memramcook Tantramar MLA Megan Mitten, touching on the COVID testing crunch, healthcare reform, and the federal Greens' performance in the recent election. Here's that conversation.
Megan Mitten, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, it's a pleasure.
So first of all, congratulations on the birth of your baby. It was a while back now, but congrats.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Henry's doing well, and Quinn's proud to be a big sister.
Oh, that's great. So you're now back to working part-time. Did things go well with your leave? I know you're blazing a bit of a trail here for New Brunswick MLAs.
Yeah, things have been running smoothly, and my priority, aside from obviously taking care of my family's health, was to make sure that constituents could still access the help that they needed through my office so that my office would keep running, full steam ahead throughout the summer. And I've been working, I'd say, since about 6 weeks postpartum, sort of part-time. And at this point, I mean, part-time for me might be sort of closer to full-time hours. But I think a lot of parents and families, when you welcome a new child into the home, you figure out how to balance it all, and so that's what we're doing.
All right. And I guess you have staff, like extra staff at the constituency office to help, to help smooth that over, right?
Yeah. So on a short-term basis, I have an extra staff member to help, smooth things over throughout the summer and into the fall, so that we can make sure that constituents are getting served, and it's going to be busy. We'll be going back to the legislature in November, so looking forward to that.
Now, before we get into a couple of like local and provincial issues, I wanted to talk a bit about the federal election.
Mm-hmm.
you know, as you know, 2 years ago, the federal Greens had a strong local candidate, Laura Rainsborough, who put up a pretty strong fight against the longstanding incumbent and current MP Dominic LeBlanc. Mm-hmm. This year, the candidate was a bit of a mystery to the local press until the candidates forum, when one of the first comments she made was that fresh air was the cure for COVID. So it was a surprising moment, I think, for a lot of folks in Tantramar. I know you're a provincial Green, but I'm guessing you're a member of the federal party. Do you know how it happened? How we had the Green candidate that we did in Beausejour?
Yeah, I think in addition to being surprising, it was extremely disappointing. And the comments from that candidate were unacceptable. Not only ones that weren't based on science, like the ones about COVID, but also there were some transphobic comments made. I am not familiar with that candidate. I am a member of the Green Party of Canada, but I wasn't involved in this campaign. I tuned in though to the debate and heard those comments, and I immediately complained to the Green Party of Canada and called on them to take action. Unfortunately, I think there were multiple factors that went into that, and one of them was just not an adequate vetting process. And so, as I said, extremely disappointing and unacceptable. And obviously, the party will need to figure out a way to do better in the future.
Mm-hmm. I think the federal Greens certainly lost a lot of steam in New Brunswick. Last, you know, in 2019, there was 75,000 Green voters, which when I looked at the number, I was like, wow, that was a lot of voters, 17%, I think. Mm-hmm. But in 2021, 20,000, about 5%. Mm-hmm. It now, obviously, we had heard about at the leadership level, the federal Greens having a lot of infighting. From your perspective, what do you think went wrong with the federal party this time around, and do you see it getting fixed in the future?
You know, I think there's always hope for the future, and unfortunately, the Green Party of Canada is in a really tough transition period right now. And, you know, Annamie Paul wasn't even in the leadership position for a year before an election was called. Everyone's been working through a pandemic, and obviously the Liberal Party was ready for an election, and some of the other parties weren't. I think that the priority in terms of voters is that there are people there are lots of people, as you said, you know, 75,000 people voted Green in 2019, and we've seen the Green Party of New Brunswick garner votes all over the province and continue to elect 3 MLAs, including myself. I think the key is having really quality candidates, in addition to the solid Green values, because I think that's the winning combination. And so we saw that wasn't the case locally here. And, you know, there's obviously some growing and building that needs to happen with the federal party. And so I'd say they just need to get to work.
All right. We'll let that one go. So now we are dealing with kind of a changing world on in terms of COVID. New Brunswick is, you know, the case numbers are blowing up and it's a little bit scary at this time. Mm-hmm. We had some new rules come in place last week. Have you been hearing from constituents concerned about those rules? I know the Tantramar region, when it comes to border crossing, has been beleaguered through this whole pandemic in terms of people trying to get back and forth across the border. I know that we don't have enforcement at the border crossings right now, but have you heard from people with issues about this new system of having to register to travel?
So I would say that the issues with the border are not as serious as they have been previously in the pandemic. There have been some people who have run into some issues with the vaccine requirements and the timing of that, unfortunately, when it comes to, I think, some university students, some different people who were in post-secondary education. I also think that the rules are fairly new, and so at this point, I haven't heard that many complaints. My concern is that the spot checks that they say are going to happen need to happen safely. That was a major issue in April when they brought in spot checks, and the RCMP and peace officers were pulling people over in an unsafe manner, and sometimes in vehicles that weren't really well marked. So that's one of the concerns for me. But so far, there have been minimal complaints. I would say one of the issues is people just trying to figure out exactly how do they register, how many times do they need to register. The website is still under construction, it appears. And so hopefully that will get sorted out soon so that it runs fairly smootly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of as has happened in the past, the infrastructure isn't quite in place once the rules start.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of frustrating, especially because we heard them say that they thought that they were going to have to bring this in. So it's frustrating that it wasn't ready to go. But here we are, and hopefully they can fix it soon.
Yeah. Okay, speaking of infrastructure not in place, we here at CHMA, we've reported on this. We've heard lots of stories. They're all over social media, people with massive delays to get tested for COVID. Mm-hmm. So we have an assessment center in Sackville. It is part-time. They don't really advertise the hours, they say, because they don't want people to drop in. But they have increased, I know, last week they added days to open that clinic. But this is, you know, we're a month into these really increased case counts happening, and now we're facing these delays. What have you been hearing about that?
Well, frankly, this is just unacceptable. And I don't blame the actual, you know, staff on the ground who are just trying to do as many tests as they can. This is more of a leadership issue. And there's two parts of this, is that the government of New Brunswick let the fourth wave catch them flat-footed. And it was very predictable that there would be an increased need for testing, that there would be an increased need for resources. And when we already have limited resources, you need to protect them. And that did not happen by getting rid of all of the rules at the very end of July. What I'm hearing from people is that they're having to wait 5 or 7 days sometimes for a test, that they don't know, as you mentioned, when the Sackville clinic is opened, and you know, maybe it would be better in some cases for them to say they could go to Moncton, but they're not sure what to do, and it's really at an individual level, it's obviously very inconvenient and stressful for people to not be able to get tests in a timely manner. But in terms of pandemic management, it's a really big problem, because that means that there are positive cases in the community that are not getting identified as quickly as we need them to. And we know, especially with the Delta variant, that it moves quickly. And so it's a problem. It's inconvenient for individuals, but it's also really bad for pandemic management.
Mm-hmm. And it's cold and flu season, and that's actually happened. Unlike last year, we're actually having a cold season this year. And I know that lots of people have one or two symptoms, and it's this question of, okay, do I put in for a test and take, you know, a week off work, or how do you go about it? I don't have the answer, and I'm sure you don't either to that, but it's frustrating. Staffing is all related to this, right? I mean, right now the hospitals are being overrun with COVID cases. The hospitalizations are rising. We in Sackville here, we have an outbreak at the Drew Nursing Home, which as of Sunday was up to 31 cases. And staffing resources there are an issue, because of course some of the Drew Nursing Home staff are also affected by the outbreak. These are all long-term issues, but also short-term crisis issues, I guess. This is what makes it difficult to deal with. Are there short-term solutions that you see, or should we just be focusing on the long-term solutions for the staffing problems that we're facing in healthcare?
Well, and first I'd like to extend my condolences to the loved ones of those who passed away. My understanding is that some people have passed away at the Drew Nursing Home due to COVID.
Yes.
And I know it's very stressful for the residents, for their families, for the staff, anyone involved with the Drew right now. We're seeing long-term issues that are making dealing with a crisis like a pandemic much more difficult. And so in the short term, one of the things that unfortunately government did not keep up with was protecting our, our human resources by maintaining some of these sort of basic and less invasive measures like wearing masks. And so we didn't tell people to stop washing their hands, which is good. Keep washing your hands, everyone, no matter what. But we should be wearing masks and minimizing our contacts and things like that, because that has that slows down the spread of the virus. And we need to, be aware that we didn't leave the pandemic behind in August, and we're not going to be leaving it behind anytime soon. So I think the protective measures of having these public health things like wearing masks and things like that are going to help. And unfortunately, some of these long-term things, we didn't get here overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight. And so this impacts whether it's the hospitals, nursing homes. There are long-term human resource issues. And a lot of it has to do with recruitment and retention. And we've seen that, unfortunately, the successive governments have failed to take adequate actions on this. And there are a lot of different pieces to this. It's not a simple problem, so there's not a simple solution. But even just ensuring we have enough nursing seats in the universities to train the people that want to become nurses, there shouldn't be wait lists at this point. We should be making sure we train everyone who wants to become a nurse. Things like that to at least really, you know, chip away at that. Focus on preventative health care. I think there does need to be some different ways of doing things that will ensure that we have adequate human resources.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a bit about recruitment. I mean, this gets mentioned a lot and as something to work on for the health networks. I know the town of Sackville, some of the citizens that are working on a committee for the Rural Health Action Group are working on recruitment. Mm-hmm. But when the CHMA spoke to the mayor of Perth Andover a while back, and one of the things she was mentioning was that, you know, the sort of increasing the competition for these people is not necessarily the answer. It sort of moves around the problem because Nova Scotia has the same problem. I think it's across Canada. We saw the Canadian Association of Nurses Unions organize a cross-country strike. They're calling attention to the fact that they're all working 24 hours. They're working like insane amounts of overtime. They're all like across the country. They're flat out and at the end of their rope, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Can we recruit our way out of this? Is that really a realistic? I mean, the conversation is so often focused on recruitment, but I wonder, are we just recruiting nurses away from each other at this point?
I do think that banking on recruiting nurses from other places isn't going to solve the problem because it, in this case, you know, we're going to lose in some cases to each other provinces because New Brunswick nurses have been paid, among the lowest paid. So that has not worked, and I don't think it's going to completely fix things. That's one of the reasons that training more nurses is really important, in ensuring that there's more people entering that field. And again, there are people who've sat on wait lists trying to get into UNB, for example. So fixing that and making sure that they adequately fund the nursing seats, that's important. And then retention. So keeping people mm-hmm. in the field or keeping people bedside, and that has to do with working conditions is definitely part of it. And so it's a bit of a vicious circle right now where people are getting burned out and not wanting to stay bedside and maybe wanting to retire or wanting to move to a different type of work. So we need to work on the retention part. In terms of actually retention in certain locations, we're waiting right now to hear what the five-year plan is, and the successive governments sort of threatening services in certain hospitals, like the Sackville Memorial Hospital, have made people nervous and mistrust government. And so there are people who are worried that they may not have a job if they are at the Sackville Hospital. And so we need it to be very clear that, no, we're not cutting services, we're not shutting down this hospital, because that's part of the recruitment and the retention, so that people aren't looking for jobs elsewhere.
Right. We have sort of an anti-recruitment issue here, which is that people look at the Sackville Hospital as a question mark at best.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And so that needs to be extremely clear. And unfortunately, even, I've called on government to be clear about that they're not going to cut services. And it'd be great if we could, we've been waiting patiently for the five-year plan. We need to see what's in that. Unfortunately, there's mistrust of the government at this point, too. So even if they say we're not cutting those services, the community is really stressed about it and worried, and I don't blame them.
All right, Megan. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. I know you're headed back to the legislature in November. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you're working on that you wanted to let Sackvillians know about or remind them about?
Well, I guess we were just talking about the hospital. That is one of the priorities for me and my office. And so I've been collecting stories from people about how they've been impacted by the closures over the weekend evenings this summer. I myself have been impacted by that. My office has been working with the Rural Health Action Group, with Horizon, and trying to find solutions. And even some things as simple as it wasn't possible to pick Sackville on the job site for the Horizon recruitment. So trying to get it so now you can choose Sackville when people, nurses, are looking for jobs. So really working around the hospital, and I'm waiting to hear when these temporary closures are going to end, because initially Horizon said September. So I'm waiting to hear on that. And then affordable housing is an issue that isn't new, but has been exacerbated by the pandemic and is a really big issue that my colleagues and I are going to be continuing to work on. It's a real struggle, I think, in rural areas, in urban areas, all across the province. We've seen really, really big problems with affordable housing. So that's also definitely on my radar.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Megan. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Erica. Take care.
That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Wednesday, September 29th. And as always, we hope that you will get in touch with your comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.